from Santa Barbara, California. The Timeless Voyager with Bruce Stephen Holmes. Talk radio for the new age. Interviews with well-established professionals in the fields of New Age philosophy, holistic health care, energy healing, psychic phenomena, and extraterrestrial encounters. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes, the Timeless Voyager.
Hello, everyone. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, the Timeless Voyager. I'm here today at the Whole Life Expo in San Diego. I'd like to welcome to the show John Lee.
Thank you, Bruce.
The Flying Boy, Healing the Wounded Man, I Don't Want to Be Alone, a new book coming out, Recovery, Plain and Simple. We started out by talking. I asked you what you were doing, and you said you're a leader in the men's movement.
Yeah, there's a men's movement. There's several folks who are sort of spearheading that movement on a national level. Robert Bly, Shepherd Bliss, who's out here on the West Coast, myself, based out of Austin, other people who've been working in it for a long time. It's basically a movement in many ways that's paralleling the women's movement of 25 years ago. There's a focused, conscious movement going on in this country that is about men growing and healing and being with each other to do so. And so there's men's groups springing up all over, a men's center. I have a center in Austin, Texas. It's one of the first men's centers. And the books on men's issues and stuff are really beginning to show up in bookstores all over the country.
Now, you have an M.A.
Mm-hmm.
That is in...
Comparative Religion and Literature.
All right. And how did you begin to discover that men needed help? We all can see that now in hindsight, but you were kind of a pioneer in this, I guess.
Well, I started years ago. Robert Bly, who is considered by many to be one of the leaders of the men's movement, came out with some stuff 10 years ago, right, in an article that was passed around, Xerox, and passed around, addressing some of these issues. And then it got to where my life was just such a mess that I had to deal with some of the very things that he talked about in that article. And consequently, then he started doing men's workshops and men's gatherings, and I went into therapy and went into men's groups, and just one thing led to another, and then I wrote the book, The Flying Boy, Healing the Wounded Man, which is basically what it was going to be, was just sort of my journey into all this. And it turned out that now it's been 125,000 other people's journey, obviously, or some part of it.
Okay, what is an issue that men need to deal with? What probably is one of the most important issues that you're coming across these days?
One of the major things is the relationship to the Father. The unresolved anger, loss, grief, hurt for having the Father not been emotionally available, physically available. That's one thing. The fact that men are wanting more intimacy in their lives, they don't know how to get it.
Is this because of their inability to relate with their fathers?
Partly. You have to have somebody as a child show you, you know, how to do things. And most fathers weren't there to show you. And if they were, they didn't know how themselves. So what you saw that passed for intimacy between your mother and father was probably what passed for intimacy between you and your last three wives. And it wasn't very much. So a lot of men feel like it's time to do some work and heal some wounds that were made, facilitate and allow for greater intimacy, not only with their wives, but with their children, with their other men, and perhaps their parents if they're still living.
What are techniques that you use to facilitate this?
Well, a lot of stuff that we focus on when I do my men's gatherings and stuff, and men's groups, is to help men grieve the losses that they've experienced, to help men get angry about some of the things that hurt them and things from childhood and adolescence and later. But we also use, like in the woods, Robert Bly and James Hillman, some of the others, myself, we use stories and poetry and drumming and dancing and sharing and to try to take us down into our body, take us back into our past and try to heal up some of those old wounds.
So do you find that men are, I guess in a sense, not as connected with their bodies and their emotions as women are, for example?
Right. Most men don't know they have bodies. Unless they've done lots of work. Between the addictions that men have used to numb out their bodies and between the things like working and to the point that they can't feel, they're practically numb with that, and other various addictions and behaviors that keep you cut off from your body. And so most men don't feel their bodies. Most men stay in their heads most of the time and they think about things. You ask a man who's not deeply worked on himself what he feels, 90% of the time he doesn't know. It doesn't mean he doesn't feel. It just means he doesn't know. He can't feel it. He's having feelings, but he can't get to them. And so, yes, women have remained a little bit more connected to their bodies, but men are doing the work to try to get some reconnectedness going.
What? All right, now I understand that in your workshops, for example, you'll have men come up and put their hands on your hands,
mm-hmm.
and you'll have them push you or act out aggression.
Right.
How does that connect them? What does that do? Does that release?
Well,
how does it work?
It's what I do, and I've taught, I teach therapists from coast to coast to do this. It's what's called emotional release work. And it allows them to go down into their body and access some of the anger, some of the grief that's around certain issues. And it's like the man in the workshop a while ago, when he got finished, he said he felt better. He said he felt like his chest was more open and he could breathe deeper and he wasn't holding as much tension in his body.
So this is this definitely is a physical release that men have. This
right.
is not just some emotional or psychological release.
Right.
We're talking about real.
Right, it's emotional, psychological, and physical. And so, consequently, you know, people just feel better. I do this with men or women. Yesterday I was doing a workshop, you know, on anger, and for men and women. And women are got just as much feelings and emotions in their body that they need to get out too. And so I teach this from coast to coast. That's what my books are about, is how to help get it out of your body as well. And you can talk it out, but it's really good to move. We're just too docile and too still most of the time.
Well, I realize that we're talking generally, because of course there are probably men who are healthy and women that are not healthy,
Absolutely.
Just as you've touched on.
Absolutely.
How does it help a man or a woman to when they release anger? How does that help them? What is it that it does that's so important?
Well, there really is a physiological aspect to it and a biochemical aspect to it. I've never worked with a man or a woman who, when I helped them to physically release or to physically experience and express powerful emotions, that they don't say, I feel better. I don't feel as tight in my back. I don't feel as tense in my neck. And then I've had them try to get out, we'll say, anger by just talking about it. And I'll say, how does your neck feel now? And they go, well, it feels about like it did before I started talking. I feel a little better, but not much better. And then I'll do an exercise with them that I teach and show. And say, now how does your neck feel? Gosh, you know, that pain that's been there for all day, it's gone. You know, and that's not miracle kind of healing. It's just them moving and through movement, through sound and releasing sound, they get their body back and their body feels better. And if you feel better, you do better because you are your body. And a lot of people have been trying therapies and programs that just work from the neck up. And they are very useful and they're very good. But that they don't usually include the body. And I do.
Let's talk a little bit about codependency. What is codependency?
Well, different people have defined it different ways. I'll give you a couple of quick definitions that work for some. One is that any time you hold back your feelings or hold back what you need to say because you're afraid somebody else might think or feel something. And you just decide to hold it in. Because you're so dependent on what people think and feel about you that you won't say what you think and feel. That's one form. The other thing is when you say something like, if you take X away from me, I won't feel very good. Whether that's work or sex or alcohol or my wife, whatever. If you take that away from me, I remember growing up and hearing my father say things like, and older men say things like, if you took away my work, I'd just die. I'd just lay down and die. That's codependency. When your lover walks out the door and you feel like you're going to die, that's codependency. It says that I don't have enough of me to keep me going. I need you. And if you're not there, I'll feel like I'm going to die. That's codependency. So therefore, I'll have to say and do and become anything I think you need me to become so you won't leave. Because if you leave, I might die.
All right, now, are there levels of codependency?
Absolutely. There's levels and degrees.
And are the levels going towards, let's say, it being normal to being abnormal? So is there a certain amount of codependency that's normal and important in your life?
There's a certain amount of codependency that's implicit and inherent in all life. Nobody is 100% healed and healthy 100% of the time. Codependency fluctuates to greater or lesser degrees depending upon the circumstances in your life and depending on how much time and energy you've devoted to recovering from codependency. So that, for instance, 5 years ago, let's say hypothetically, I spent 85% of my daily life in a codependent stupor. Today, on a good day, I would spend maybe 20% of that day in some aspect of, I might not say what I really feel to this person over here, but those other five people I was pretty honest with and pretty authentic with. Whereas 10 years ago, I just wouldn't have been honest with anybody because I was afraid what everybody thought and felt about me. Now it's not so important because I got more of me back. And that's come from years of working in 12-step recovery programs and in being in therapy. I've done that for years for myself, and it's one of the major things that my books are about.
So you're implying a number of things here. Let's see. First of all, you have to recognize that you are codependent because you just can't be told that you're codependent.
Right. You have to get it. You have to finally become aware of it yourself. And that usually is precipitated by a life crisis of some kind, usually. A loss of a partner, a divorce, a separation, a job failure, a parent dying, a child going off to college, whatever. Before you go, gosh, you know, I didn't realize how much of my self-worth I got from my job. This is pitiful. I'm falling apart here. Or I didn't realize how much I needed to be married. I don't have a life if I'm not married. And then you get hit with your life and you start working on it usually.
All right, now, if that issue doesn't come up and you are happy in a codependency relationship, then you are blissfully ignorant or ignorantly blissful.
Yeah. The truth is...
So what are we looking at here? Are we looking at telling someone that they're happy if in a false way, even though they're happy?
My position is if it's not broken, don't fix it.
All right.
And my experience from coast to coast and also from my own wife says that most people are open to finding out where they need healing. And that's why the codependency movement in this country has spread like wildfire, because many people realize that they've always known that they were just a little bit too dependent on jobs, other people, substances to feel better than they should be using those things to feel.
All right, I'm inferring now that a codependency is an addiction.
That's right. It really is. It's addiction to things, processes, or people. And if you take one of those things, processes, or people away, they'll feel like crap. They will hurt. They will think they're going to die. They'll think that they don't have enough life in them to live unless they get that thing, person, or process back.
So here in America, the drug issue is nothing more than an example of the whole issue, which is addictions.
That is pretty much the case. That most
and we
of
just
us in
zeroed
the
in on drugs because right. That's the easiest one to recognize,
that's
and
right.
But not the easiest to fix.
Let me give you an example. This will make some people. Well, it's like what we were saying is, for instance, somebody is an alcoholic. They'll get off alcohol. When they get off alcohol, what they find themselves very often doing is working 70 hours a week, drinking 8 to 12 to 20 cups of coffee a day, eating sugar like they've never eaten it before. Well,
and
they
feel they're cured.
Yeah, we got them off the alcohol.
Because they talk about it. Right?
We got them off the alcohol. What we didn't get them, though, is to face the pain that got them on the alcohol in the first place, and now the work, the caffeine, the sex is going to keep that pain submerged almost as well as the alcohol did. Then they will get off work, or they'll get off caffeine, but then they'll start smoking cigarettes and become terribly involved with romances on a regular basis. Part of us in the field believe that it's because we're dependent personalities on something, because if we don't have that something, feelings are going to start emerging that we don't feel equipped to deal with. And so what we try to do is take one layer at a time, help folks get off one layer at a time. So a lot of people, you know, really see that codependency is really the root. It's really the addiction, and that these others are manifestations or symptoms of that. So, you know, it's real hard. It's like, so that means, well, what do you, if you have somebody that is codependent, you know they're codependent, but they don't know they're codependent, what do you do with them? They finally stop drinking alcohol, but they're still as codependent as they can be. They're dependent on other things. There is really, in my opinion, no way that you can help anybody face their disease of codependency or alcoholism.
Or drug addiction
or drug
anything
addiction.
For
no.
That matter.
No. The thing for me is to do a couple of things. One is to always bring it back to the individual. First of all, why do you want or need to live with somebody who has a drinking problem?
So you turn this around to the person who's making the complaint.
Always, always. What do you need to do to heal your woundedness to where this situation will either not bother you or you'll never recreate it again should you get out?
So because, are we talking about two codependencies then? I mean, that's what codependency is.
That's right.
One person is dependent on something outside.
Himself or herself.
All right, the other person is dependent on the person.
That's right, that's right.
So this is what we have then.
That's right. So usually we have two codependents getting together. Years ago, it was the alcoholic and the co-alcoholic. Now many of us are realizing that the alcoholic is codependent and the co-alcoholic was codependent. And I always bring it back, turn it back on them. I don't know what is going on with this person over here. What is going on with me? What is going on with you? You're in a relationship with somebody. We can't spend any time talking about her. We don't know who she is, what she is. She's not here. What about you? Why? How? When? What are you going to do about it? How are you going to take care of yourself? Because if you get that person in treatment, you still have not faced how you came to be there. And if that person gets treated, he may leave you, and you'll go get another person because you never got to the root of your own stuff. So it's very, very important. And in the process, it's like I joke with people all the time. They say, you know, thank you for writing The Flying Boy. It's helped so much. I've sent it to 6 or 8, 10 friends. You know, most of the time they don't read it. most of the time they don't read it. Until a person is ready to pick up the book themselves, it'll stay in their bookshelf. And very often the person who sent it will be resented for it, in many cases. The more appropriate, healthy, functional way is something like this. I got a tape by so-and-so, or I've got a book by so-and-so, and I think it's just great because I've listened to it myself. It's helped me a lot. And you know, if you're ever interested, I'd be glad to share it with you.
And that's it.
That's it. That's it.
Anything beyond that is over the line.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, and believe me, that's hard for me to say for a man who loves royalties as much as I do. But I would rather have it that way, to where that person then comes to the book or the tape because it's time, not because somebody else thought it was time.
Let's talk a little bit about treatment.
Okay.
We've identified a problem. What are some of the treatments then for codependency?
Well,
are there treatments?
Yeah, and the variety is wide. You can do everything from just joining a 12-step self-help program based on Alcoholics Anonymous called Codependence Anonymous. Very useful program, very good program. It's found all over the country now.
They've just pretty much identified the problem now. It used to be there was gamblers and there was overeaters.
And there still are. And there are many people who would say, I got a gambling problem, I don't have a codependency problem. Well, that may be so, and it may also be so that in 2 years from now, just like very often, people from AA or Narcotics Anonymous will go get clean and sober. And then 3 years later, they'll show up at a Codependence Anonymous meeting and say these words, I thought it was tough kicking my alcohol. This is what's tough.
Right.
You know.
Can we just address a few of the 12 steps just for the sake of people who may not be familiar with them that much? I realize there's a certain amount of anonymity.
The 12-step program is really based on AA, and it's a program that carries you spiritually and emotionally through a healing process that, if you stay with it, will work. If you put that with therapy, it will work better and faster and deeper. Because the 12 steps is not psychotherapy. The 12 steps are spiritual and emotional therapy that do help you rearrange, restructure, and reshape your life. But very often, in and of itself, it won't carry the healing process quite as deep. I've made a point in my lectures and workshops always to integrate the two, the 12-step program and therapy. The best way to do that, obviously, one of the best ways is to, they have treatment centers all over the country now where you get therapy and you work the 12 steps. 12 step, first step being I had to admit that I was powerless over gambling, alcohol, or in codependence 12 step, I had to admit that I was powerless over another person and that my life has become unmanageable.
All right, now I need to backtrack for a second. If I'm codependent with alcohol, still the basis was that I was powerless over another person. And coming back to what you have been doing, which is the men's issues, I guess I was powerless over my father.
Powerless over your father and powerless over your mother, and they held power over you.
So if I'm codependent now, the issue that needs to be resolved is this issue between me and my parents, who may or may not be living. How is that treatable?
Well, most of the issues that we have with our parents is the introjective, or the parent that lives inside the back of our head someplace. And we have to get that out some way and deal with it. There's a number of techniques, psychotherapy techniques for doing that, writing letters to them, the empty chair technique, talking to the parent in the empty chair, Bataka work, beating out the anger and stuff, grief work, that sort of stuff will all help address that. And whether they're alive or dead. But you're right. I mean, you put your finger on it. What I teach is going back to the mother and the father again and again until that work is largely resolved. It's very scary work, it's very time-consuming work, and it's not easy. Most people would rather just have a few beers and forget it.
So, Weir, you talk about the parent inside. What you're saying, basically, is that we are carrying with us an image, mm-hmm. a remembrance, unconsciously, I presume.
Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example. I broke up with a woman, my fiance, about a year ago. And when I broke up, this was the thing that I said the day we broke up. I won't use the same language, but I'll use close. The language was, you can't do anything right. You don't know enough to even have a relationship. If you can't do it, why don't you just stay out of a relationship? You don't deserve a relationship. That's a voice that I carried in my head for years, where my father would say when I would mess up, you don't deserve to have this toy, or you can't do anything right. Get out of the way. Let me do it. He put that voice right inside my head. What a codependent has to do is get to a place in recovery where he takes those negative messages out through the process of recovery and therapy, and he supplants them with positive voices, positive messages. That's one reason why we've seen so much success with affirmation type stuff.
This is not easy stuff to do now.
No, it's not easy at all. It's so difficult that most people choose not to do it, or they will start, but they don't ever really go on through the process. People will start, do therapy or 12-step stuff for 6 weeks after a divorce or 2 months after a divorce, and then they'll just go find somebody else and marry them, and then let the program slide and let therapy slide, and then the mistakes will be repeated all over again most of the time.
So there's nothing wrong with the treatment, and there's nothing wrong with the possibility of recovery. The problem is how focused a person wants be on this situation.
Right. Exactly. How committed. It's like, I'll give you an example. I've been going to Codependence Anonymous. I've been doing other 12-step programs too, but I've been going to Codependence Anonymous for 3 years. And periodically through those years, I think, I'm doing okay. I can let this go now. And then I'd get in a relationship and I'd say, gosh, I still have so much stuff. And I go back to the meetings. So what I realized is that recovery is an ongoing process that will probably take the rest of my life. But I don't put nearly as much time and energy into it as I had to 5 years ago, because I've healed a number of my significant core issues, but I still have more. You put me in a relationship with another warm living body, I'll begin to find out what those are.
Now, this is the title of your new book, Recovery.
Plain and Simple.
Plain and Simple.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's
what is plain and simple?
Well, the way this is, this particular book is that it is a way to say recovery doesn't have to be as complicated as some people make it. Codependency is not as complicated as some people make it. And so what I've done in this book is just stated in plain and simple terms. I'm from Alabama. That's how you have to teach me. You have to talk to me in plain, simple ways. And that's the way I do it in my lectures and workshops.
How about some examples? I mean, you've done some great examples so far. Recovery.
Well, for instance, recovery is basically trying, plain and simple. You go to meetings and you listen, you shut up and you listen to folks, and then you talk to folks who have shut up and listened to you. If you had have had that as a kid, you wouldn't have to be going to meetings in the first place, plain and simple. If parents had really listened and said, oh, you're angry? Tell me about your anger. Let it out. Oh, you're sad? I love you anyway. Come on, tell me how sad you are. I'll be right here with you.
So this is the core.
It is the core.
The core issue, then, is with the parents.
That's right. Always with the parents. And how that gets expressed is you go out and marry somebody that reminds you of them, or or something, so that you can work out your issues with your parents. What I've said in the last few workshops is that I'm hoping it's time for people to begin rather using relationships to recover. They bring their recovery to their relationships.
John, this has been a phenomenal, just a great, it's been a great little relationship here.
Well, thank you.
I've enjoyed this a lot. You told me about a magazine that you have.
Right, we, at the Austin Men's Center in Austin, we do workshops and events and stuff there, but I also do stuff all over the country. But we have a magazine now that's available in many bookstores across the nation called Man, with its focus on men's issues, recovery, and relationships.
John, thank you very much for being on the show. John Lee.
Thank you, Bruce.
This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, The Timeless Voyager.